Locals call it Blono for short. Today we're on the road in Bloomington Normal talking coffee, bikes, and local business from the Coffee Hound. Plus, you might remember an ad by Governor Rauner featuring Eric Greitens, his Republican counterpart in Missouri. But now that Governor Greitens has been charged with sexual assault, Governor Rauner says it's time for Greitens to step down.
Republicans as well as Democrats in Missouri have called for the governor to step down in the best interest of Missourians, and that seems like a reasonable request.
We'll talk about that and the week in state and local politics with Derek B. from the Pantograph and Ryan Denham from WGLT. And even though the number of bike commuters has increased nationwide, it's still a tiny percentage of people across the country. What does this look like in Bloomington Normal?
We don't have many places in town where the roads are well suited to cyclists. So we have a few bike lanes here and there, but it's kind of scattershot at this point.
That's all coming up on our 21st Live from the Coffee Hound in Bloomington Normal. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and hello, Bloomington Normal. This week, we're broadcasting from Blono, as the locals say. We're at the Coffee Hound on East Washington Street. We're here all hours. Stop by and say hi. On Wednesday, we'll be at Greentop Grocery. Tomorrow, we're at our partner station, WGLT. Thanks to all of you who listen via that station. We're at the Coffee Hound's third location, CH3, which is a space shared with Bloomington Cycle and Fitness. Later in the hour, despite today's weather, we are going to be talking spring cycling tips. Let's pretend there's not snow on the ground across most of the state. Anyway, it's a great day for a hot drink. And with me now is owner of the Coffee Hound, April Fritzen. Hi, April. Welcome to the 21st, and thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So this is actually your first anniversary. You just had your first anniversary at this location. Why did you want to expand to this location on this part side of Bloomington?
Really, this location was about community involvement. We do a lot of activities here based around the community, partnerships, being able to do collaborations with other local businesses. And this was a shared space, and the theme seemed right, and coffee and bikes go really well together.
They do. So this is your third location. You also have a roaster because you roast your own coffee as well.
Right, and that is done off-site. It started out inside our downtown location, kind of outgrew that, needed to get a bigger roaster, but it's still in a downtown. It's just over in the industrial area right underneath Center Street.
And so we're on the east side of Bloomington near downtown. Can you describe this area for people who aren't familiar with the area?
Well, it's a neighborhood right next to Beer Nuts headed east toward Veterans Parkway.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And with us is one of your neighbors for your downtown location, Vicki Tilton. She's co-owner of Fox and Hounds Day Spa. Hi, Vicki. Thanks for being here as well.
Hi, Nyla. Thank you for inviting me.
So both of you, I wonder if both of you can share with me sort of the differences between operating businesses, between Bloomington and Normal. April, can I start with you and just ask you, own locations across both cities?
Right, yes. Well, we started out in downtown Bloomington, and that was in 2002. And then in 2006, we opened up a location in Uptown Normal. And I would definitely say that each store has its own personality of personnel that come in, like our customers. It does feel different. Downtown Bloomington, we have a lot of people that work in the area, so it has maybe a little bit older crowd, maybe 30s and up. And then at our Normal location, we get a lot of the ISU students, but then professors. But that area is ever changing because there's a lot of building that's going on there.
And you actually opened your location right when, so for people who aren't familiar with the area, the big renovation. So Downtown Normal is called Uptown for everybody.
Right.
So
yep.
let's make that clear for everybody.
Yeah.
And there was a really big renovation of kind of a rebuilding of Uptown. Was that about 10 years ago, April?
Yeah, maybe 11 or 12, actually.
And that was right when you opened a Coffee Hound location?
Yeah, as soon as we opened the doors, everything was torn down, it felt like. Yeah.
Okay. And Vicki, you all have been in business for almost 50 years.
Yeah, 47 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's your secret?
My belief is if I take care of my employees, they take care of business. And that's worked very well for us for a number of years. So we're very good to our employees, and they take really good care of the clients.
Right. And so, Vicki, I wonder what it's, if you can talk about the idea, would you ever have thought about opening a location in Normal? You guys have such a presence in Bloomington for a long time.
Well, no, at one point when I worked for Fox and Hounds and didn't own it yet, we did have two locations, and one of them was in Normal. I was born and raised in Normal, so I have a huge emotional attachment to Normal. But when we bought the building we're in now, which we bought 22 years ago, we have 7,000 square feet. So we...
it's a big space.
Yes, and we have talked about having a second location, but I have three partners, and it's up to them because I'm getting closer to an exit strategy. So it's up to them if they want to do that. But it has been talked, and at one point we were negotiating having a salon in one of the hotels in Uptown Normal.
I'm here with April Fritzen. She's owner of the Coffee Hound in Bloomington, and Vicki Tilton, who's a co-owner of Fox and Hounds Day Spa in downtown Bloomington. For people who are not from the area, what's the difference between, are there differences between Bloomington and Normal? How would you guys describe them, April?
I mean, I think there is. I live in Normal now, but I've lived in Bloomington, and I have businesses in both locations. And I think that although each are different, they work together. You know, there's times, I think there's an ebb and flow that takes place. And I know for me, I've enjoyed both cities, and I have trouble distinguishing, you know, a favorite.
How about you, Vicki?
Well, downtown Bloomington is a much bigger area. Geographically, we have, I can't tell you the number of blocks off the top of my head. Normal is much smaller. You know, Normal has a more progressive image, but what we have in Bloomington that we treasure is our architecture and our history. Abraham Lincoln spent a lot of time in a lot of the buildings downtown that are still standing. So I've never seen us as competitors with Uptown Normal. I believe we are partners, and I believe we should work together. Because I'm from Normal originally, but have lived most of my adult life in Bloomington. So I've seen the competition between Bloomington High School and Normal Community, and I think that's so appropriate at a high school level. But when you get to be adults, you all need to be working together and trying to complement each other and not see it as a competition.
And especially when it comes to economic development, and I want to bring a third person into this conversation. Zach Dietmeyer is the Director of Marketing and Communications for the Economic Development Council. He also runs bnadvantage.com, which is a regional marketing economic development effort. Zach, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks, Nyla.
Zach, how does that work? Bnadvantage is about a year old now, and you all are trying to obviously market as a region, which is kind of what you need to do when you're thinking about going after big companies and things like that.
Absolutely. Attraction marketing is a big part of our focus at the EDC, and really we realize that to be able to market all the full aspects of Bloomington Normal and McLean County, it was very important to have all the parties at the table. So about 2 years ago, we had some consultants come in, tell us really what direction to go, and we got five main entities together between the EDC, the Chamber of Commerce, our Convention and Visitors Bureau, our airport at Central Illinois Regional Airport, and the Connect Transit as well, to really focus on what we needed to do from a vibrancy aspect for quality of life, for entrepreneurship, because we have a very vibrant entrepreneurship culture here, as you have Vicki and April here, and we're right next door to Beer Nuts, which was started and has stayed here for almost 80 years now. It was very important for us to focus in on these aspects and to really look at how we can market ourselves, and we brought in a sixth partner with the Regional Planning Commission to see how we can track that to really focus on our goals and successes and tell the right stories.
Yeah, it's a lot of people that you have to bring together at the table. When you're, I think about the amount of people it requires for just one town to get together to market. You have two towns, two entire political structures that you're working with to try to bring everybody to the same table.
Oftentimes it feels like I have about 200 to 250 bosses telling me which direction to go. So it does slow down the process a little bit to really take a good close look at what are the most important facets. But once we get them figured out, it's now moving forward and really moving our community forward through that process.
April, can you give us a sense of what you think the level of investment is in Uptown and Normal versus downtown Bloomington? It sounds like there's a lot more, obviously, it sounds like there's a lot more in Uptown from my conversations that we were having, and also just anyone who's in the area can kind of see that sometimes too.
It is different. I would say like Bloomington feels freelanced. I mean, anymore. Any decision, like most decisions, if I'm going to do something, it's can be done. I feel like downtown Bloomington is very artistic, and that comes across in everything that we're doing. So I can work with others in the area, but I don't have to run it past as many people. And in Normal, things are very structured and organized. And even though it was a lot of those ideals were put in place by the business owners, the building owners, and as well as the town itself.
Mm-hmm. Zach, can you explain the thinking behind the Uptown and the creation of the renovation of Uptown? And there's a lot of big anchors that came in. It's been almost 10 years now, right, since the Children's Museum and those other really, those big projects happened.
Right, and that was a town decision. They made that choice to really take what they had at the time, which needed some updates and needed some revitalization, and they cleared it. They just went for it, and that was a big decision, and it was a difficult process to get to that point, but you see the fruits of it now here a decade into the entire revitalization, and it's a very, very popular area, and it is very much so from a quality of life aspect overall that you see some of those real gains.
And Vicki, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about what the changes you've seen, and as you've been a longtime business owner in Bloomington.
Well, we've been downtown Bloomington 22 years. We bought a 5-story building that was abandoned. There was nothing in it. It's full now. I mean, we have very fast turnover. If something opens up, we have 10 residential units. The upper stories were not occupied for the most part downtown, and there were other people that were already trying to blaze that trail of having more residential. But I don't have statistics with me, Nyla, but there's very few upper stories that are not full now, and that's in the smaller buildings. You know, we just had State Farm vacate, Verizon, is that it? Frontier, whatever it's called now, they have an empty. But so there's a lot of really large buildings that are empty.
But the small buildings aren't.
But the small buildings are not. And there's a lot of storefronts that are full that were not before. And, you know, to have growth, you have change. And I do believe those bigger companies that have moved out, it's because they've done very well. And they've moved on to other locations and other business models and plans, and so we'll find something to do with these big buildings down here.
Right, that's a big question. Zach, I wonder what being an advantage and the folks at EDC are thinking about that.
We're very much so in the conversation. It is on our minds every day, and we work very closely with the city in this case in Bloomington to hopefully find a partner. We have those conversations with State Farm as they still maintain ownership of the big building on the square as mm-hmm. well. But that's going to be a highly sought-after property, and we're confident we'll be able to utilize that here in the near future, hopefully.
Right. Obviously, you can't have a conversation about Bloomington without mentioning State Farm. That's going to come up a couple of times, and we're going to be talking about State Farm later in the week as well. Vicki, can you tell us about Fox and Hounds Day Spa? I imagine with being in business for so long, you've got probably generations of clients who have come
to you. I just did a first haircut on a little boy that's a third generation. And we have the original owner was English, and so Fox and Hounds came from English slang for men and women. And as I've said, I managed for the original owner. I've managed for two subsequent owners, and then 27 years ago, my husband and I bought it. I lured my daughter back from Florida to be my business manager. Otherwise, I wasn't going to get to do what I love, which is hair. And so she's been my business manager for 27 years. And you've also
expanded as well into having a day spa as well.
Yes, and that started right before we came downtown. I added massage therapists. There was no licensing for massage therapists at that time. There was no nail technician's license at that time. We work very, very hard to support the legislation in our industry and do things the way the government tells us to do it. And it does impact the quality of the services in the industry. So it's a, you know, we've gone through a lot of updates through the state of Illinois.
And I wonder for both of you, April, Vicki, if you could weigh in on the state of Illinois. We hear oftentimes from small business owners how tough things are sometimes with the instability in state government. We've actually had a whole year since we've had a budget. Vicki, do you want to weigh in here?
I'm just going to say that we all know it's very tough to do business in Illinois because of the state of Illinois, but that takes you back to be an advantage. I'm on that leadership group, and what we recognize is that we need to sing the praises of what we have to offer downstate and get people to know what the benefits are. And things like Brandt coming here and Rivian coming here, there are people who are listening. And it's important that people not get bogged down in what the state is doing, but work with what we have here.
Zach, can you tell us about Rivian?
Rivian Automotive is, I guess you'd still term them an automotive startup at this point, more of a tech startup in
They're
the lines.
They're an electric vehicle company.
Exactly,
though.
Yeah. Okay. And focusing now in this phase on electric vehicles, but hopefully in the future they're going to look more into the autonomous vehicle technology as well. And we're excited to have them. It was a very dark day, I would say, for McLean County when we lost the Mitsubishi Motor factory out there, and there was all hands on deck effort to get that refilled. And oftentimes you see something that's 2 million square feet in manufacturing in this day and age that's hard to fill, and we were able to find them and bring them in. They like the culture of Bloomington Normal, and in fact, their CEO tells about sitting in the Coffee Hound uptown and hearing conversations around him, and he said, we don't want to buy equipment from this factory that's going away. We want the whole thing, and we want to be in this community. So that's why BN Advantage is so important to us from that outside.
That's Zach Dietmeyer with BN Advantage. If you check out bnadvantage.com, it's a regional marketing economic development effort. We're going to take a break, but I want to thank April Fritzen for being with us as well, owner of Coffee Hound Bloomington, and Vicki Tilton, a co-owner of Fox and Hounds Day Spa. Ladies, thanks for being with me as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned to the 21st. Coming up, we're going to continue our show live from the Coffee Hound on East Washington in Bloomington. You're listening to the 21st.
The 21st is supported by the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology, presenting Sandra Singh Low, host of the NPR.org podcast, The Lowdown on Science, for the Smith Group JJR Lecture, noon on Friday, April 20th, in the Beckman Institute Auditorium.
The 21st. Thanks for tuning in. We are live from the Coffee Hound in Bloomington. We're talking about all things Bloomington Normal. We were just talking about the economic development of downtown Bloomington, uptown, that's Normal. We've got two folks with us. On Mondays, we normally also talk state politics. So we're going to combine the economic development conversation and the state politics question with two folks. Ryan Denham is a reporter at WGLT, our partner station, and Derek Bees, a government reporter with the Pantograph. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Derek, let me start with you, and just going back to our conversation we were having before the break, as you've reported a lot on the economic development strategies, how would you characterize the difference in investment that's happened between uptown and downtown Bloomington?
Sure. Well, I think that there's really been an emphasis in Uptown Normal on putting uptown resources up front. I had a conversation with some folks at the town about how they got the Marriott to come there, and that's been a huge catalyst of Uptown Normal. And a lot of it was that they gave the land for free, they gave incentives, they contributed to the parking deck. And with Bloomington's big project, the Coliseum, now the arena, there's been sort of a backlash against it, partially because it continues to kind of pull money that people weren't expecting, that the city has to keep pumping funds into it. And that's really, in some ways, defined the discourse about both of them.
Yeah. And would you guys find, we're just talking to Zach from BN Advantage about a regional cooperative effort. Sometimes it's tough when you have two towns. Do you guys feel like sometimes there is competition and poaching between Bloomington and Normal?
Yeah, I think that sometimes comes up. Last year, there was a pretty notable dispute locally over a kind of a tax sharing agreement that both municipalities had in place. It's called the Metro Zone, and you know, one of the cities, Bloomington, pulled out of it kind of unilaterally, and it angered some folks on the Normal Town Council side, and that certainly froze relations for a little while between the two. But you know, it's warmed up a little bit since then.
And is there a sense, do you think, either of both of you, that the political leadership in both towns recognizes the need to work together to bring companies like Rivian to the area?
I think for sure they do. You know, we've heard these disputes about the Metro Zone, about sales tax sharing, and there's definitely some tension. That's the only time I've ever heard anybody refer to maybe one town suing the other one. That was something normal discussed. But then when something comes up like Rivian or like Brandt, and they have to go around and get property tax abatements from all of the local taxing bodies, they all step up.
Yeah. Ryan, you've reported a lot on Rivian. How many jobs is that going to be bringing to the region?
Well, it's going to stage it over time. I think up to 1,000 is sort of the ballpark. But I think as of now, they're, I think, north of 50 and growing rapidly. They have to hit certain benchmarks on an annual basis.
To hit the economic incentive targets,
exactly,
that both that were set for them. I want to switch gears and ask you all about political parties. Ryan, you've been on the 21st before talking about this, about the change in leadership in both the Democrat and the Republican parties. Derek, there are some changes expected this week in terms of local party leadership. Is that correct?
That's right. This is the week that the precinct committee men are going to meet and choose who's going to lead the Democratic Party, which has a three-way race to succeed the previous leader, and the Republican Party, although we think we know who's going to be the new leader over there.
Right. And Ryan, can you remind folks why this is important? Because I think people think, does it matter who's the committee leadership of either party? What do they do?
Yeah, it does sound like a very inside baseball, you know, on the outside looking in. But ultimately, it is really interesting in the Democratic Party, at least. You've got this some of the same national tensions that are playing out between that progressive Bernie Sanders sort of section of the Democratic Party and then the more old guard traditionalist section of the Democratic Party that Hillary Clinton represented. You have that playing out here. So you've got the three candidates to become the next chair of the Democratic Party are split up in very much the same way. And you've got all these kind of new Democrats coming into the fold here locally. And, you know, the party's about to make a pretty important decision about what direction they want to go. Is it going to be way more progressive, way more grassroots, or is it going to still be kind of union, you know, tied as it has been for decades?
Yeah, Derek, do you have any sense? Does either of you want to make predictions about which way you think it's going to go?
Oh, man, you know, politics these days is so unpredictable.
No one wants to make predictions.
In 2016,
about
we learned that lesson. Right?
I will say, based on kind of the trend that we've seen since 2016, you know, Democrats sweeping into the Normal Township leadership and a very longtime Democrat on the McLean County Board being unseated by a more progressive candidate, I would not bet against the progressives on this one.
And what about the Republican side, Derek? What does that look like?
Well, as I said, I think we know who the new leader is going to be, but it's interesting to me because...
And who's that?
I believe Connie Beard is the front runner at this
Ryan's
point. I'm not
nodding.
Sure there's another candidate even.
Right.
I mean, I shouldn't speak for the previous leader, but I think there's kind of a sense, the same way you're seeing with Paul Ryan on the federal level, that this might be a good time for a Republican to get out.
Yeah. And so, Ryan, it's an interesting direction the way you talked about sort of the tensions within the Democratic Party. Would you say that the same thing is true for the Republican Party here in McLean County?
Yeah, to some degree. I think the way that the Republican Party messages itself, or the way it communicates what it believes in, is very much a source of tension within the local Republican Party. The current chair has been a very ardent, very vocal, very very much aligned with some of the things President Trump is doing. And the new chair, Connie Beard, might believe those same things, but she certainly has a different communication style. She's a theater major when she was in college, and she's a much softer tone, and I think that the Republican Party will sort of lean into for the next 2 years at least.
We're talking politics with Ryan Denham. He's a reporter with WGLT, and Derek B., who's the government reporter at the Pantograph. I wanted to ask both of you about a race that's the 13th Congressional District. And as you were talking about, I think that may be a microcosm a little bit of also what we've been talking about with the parties, with both parties. Certainly now we have, we had five opponents to Rodney Davis in this round, five Democrats who lined up to try to run against him. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan was the winner. She's from Springfield. And she's now going to be facing Republican Rodney Davis. This district covers so much of Illinois. There's, like, I think it's all or part of 14 counties in central and southwest Illinois. I wanted to ask you guys what the sense is in Bloomington. I know when you, in Champaign-Urbana, for example, when you drive around town, you see lots of bumper stickers that say, unseat Rodney Davis. There's a lot of protests at his office in Champaign. I feel like there's a lot of there's a couple groups that are very active. Would you say the same thing is true in Bloomington?
It is, yeah. And I think something that we learned even from the gubernatorial election, the most recent primary between Pritzker and Biss and Kennedy, is that there was like a lot of energy for Daniel Biss, who was like sort of seen as that progressive, you know, fairly left-leaning candidate. And there's a lot of local energy behind Biss, and he won McLean County, where we are right now, college town, but he lost the state handily, right? So you can't let some of the college town vibe trick you into thinking that this is still not a conservative-leaning district that Davis is projected to keep. But, you know, it's going to be a fight.
Yeah, I think that kind of college town divide is sort of interesting in the way the congressional districts are broken up here, which is we have seen a lot of that progressive energy, like we've seen protests at Congressman Davis's office up in Uptown Normal, but there is not as much. There's some, but not as much with Darren LaHood's district in the 18th, okay, where he has an office in East Bloomington.
Oh, interesting. Right. But it's certainly, I would imagine this is a district where Congressman Davis draws a lot of support, as you're saying, Ryan. I imagine you all are expecting you're going to start. He didn't have an opponent in the primary, so we didn't hear very much from him. But I imagine now you're going to start seeing him even more than usual, probably, perhaps.
Oh, he's been around a lot. In the last 2 weeks, I think he's had 3 different visits to Bloomington Normal, a manufacturing plant, I forget some of the other ones, but yeah, he's certainly been around a lot, and we're going to see a lot of them.
Yeah, let's move on to Governor Bruce Rauner. I wanted to ask you about Governor Rauner saying on Thursday he was deeply troubled by an investigation into Missouri Governor Eric Reitens. Ryan, I wonder if you can explain a little bit of the backstory for us here in terms of the relationship. What do we know of the relationship between Governor Rauner and Governor Greitens?
I think what makes that relationship interesting is that Governor Rauner put Governor Greitens in a campaign ad last year that was kind of a funny ad, actually. You had the governors of the states adjoining Illinois saying thank you to Speaker Mike Madigan for, you know, ostensibly ruining the state or something.
Right, they're all saying, thanks, Mike. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike, yeah. And so Greitens appears in this ad, and then, you know, Greitens is indicted, and Rauner has to put some distance between the two of them. He pulls the ad, and then obviously last week he says, hey, Greitens, you should resign. So there's, and, you know, Rauner's contributed money to Greitens' campaign, so there's a relationship there that has been severed.
Right, and certainly we've now, Governor Rauner's being very clear about the fact that he's saying he's deeply troubled by this investigation into extramarital sexual encounters that Governor Greitens is alleged to have had. So it's kind of, I guess we'll just see how often this comes up in the general campaign, Ryan.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Governor Rauner has sort of gone on incognito a little bit as he comes through Bloomington Normal. He's made a couple of trips here in the last month since the primary, you know, without announcing it to the media ahead of time. He's sort of coming in and out of town without much notice. So these are certainly questions we would want to ask him more about next time we talk to him when he's through town.
Yeah. I wonder, Derek, how popular is Governor Rauner in McLean County as you're around town? Is that a tough question to answer?
Well, I'm trying to remember the primary results. Maybe Ryan knows that offhand. I think there is something to the idea that Ryan mentions that he's been here recently. I covered him at the county Republican dinner last week, but it definitely was not announced, and he was definitely not taking questions.
Okay, so I think probably what we've seen with Governor Rauner is a reluctance to talk to the media generally during his administration, but it sort of sounds like he's also making clear to have private meetings with lots of supporters around town as well.
And to answer your last question, too, about how he performed in McLean County, I think he outperformed himself statewide here in McLean County. I think he won McLean County by about 6 points, whereas statewide,
right,
I think he won
and
by
it was
3.
A much smaller margin. Yeah, I think it was a 20,000 vote margin, less than 20,000 between Jeannie Ives and Governor Rauner, which I think was about 3.8 Brewster, so right, definitely an outperformance here in McLean. Brian, can I ask you, just to completely switch gears and ask you about the something we haven't heard about in a while, which is the Equal Rights Amendment, and that's something the Illinois Senate voted on Wednesday?
Yeah, so that, you know, passed the Senate. There's some question about whether or not it passing the Senate and potentially the House is a symbolic gesture, given how much time has passed since the ERA sort of was floating through the states back in the 80s. There was ostensibly a 1982 deadline on legislatures passing this thing. Locally, though, it's kind of playing out in an interesting way. We have two state senators who represent Bloomington-Normal, Bill Brady, a former candidate for governor, and then Jason Berrickman. And Bill Brady voted no on the ERA last week. Jason Berrickman voted yes. In the past, Bill Brady has said that the deadline, again, was back in 1982, so it's really a symbolic gesture. He says the Illinois Constitution already has pretty strong equal protection language, so there may not be a need for it. But Berrickman is sort of an interesting character now. He's sort of positioning himself as a moderate Republican on this issue, on medical, on marijuana legalization. So he's somebody to kind of keep an eye on as potential statewide interest.
Right. And it's sort of an interesting idea also. We saw this a lot last week with Equal Pay Day, lots of conversation around this issue, that this is still something. And I imagine, Ryan, in the year where you have more female candidates than have ever run for office, it's in everyone's best interest to be talking about issues that are, well, not just important to women, I would say. I think equal pay is probably important to men as well, but that's probably an important issue.
Yeah, the political ground certainly has shifted on that.
So we're talking with Ryan Denham and Derek B., government reporter. Derek B. is a government reporter for the Pantograph. Ryan Denham is a reporter at WGLT. Ryan, in terms of politics, as we're thinking about other big stories, we've got the state legislature pretty busy this week. Anything else on your radar?
No, I think locally there's an issue that you're going to be getting into, I think, later in the week, an immigration issue with the Welcoming City Ordinance. This is kind of like a sanctuary city type issue for some of your listeners to latch onto. That's something we're paying attention to locally. But
right, and we're actually going to be talking about that tomorrow on the program. So thanks to both of you for being with me. Derek B. is a government reporter at the Pantograph. Ryan Denham, a reporter with WGLT. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tuning into the 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. Normally, this is the time of year we tell you it's time to pull your bike out of the garage and give it a nice tune-up for spring. This morning, there is snow on the ground here in Bloomington Normal, where we're broadcasting from the Coffee Hound. There's snow all over the state, actually, as we've been hearing, we're at the Coffee Hound. We're in the middle of a bike shop as well. It's a Bloomington Cycle and Fitness, and I'm joined now by two of its co-owners, Karen Davis and Scott Davis. Thanks for being here, guys. Welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
So we started the hour talking to April about the coffee shop. I wanted to ask you, Karen, why you decided to partner with the Coffee Hound to combine bikes and coffee?
Well, Stephen, April, and Scott and I have been friends for a long time. We really looked up to them and talked to them a lot when we were buying Bloomington Cycle 10 years ago and partnered on a couple blends of coffee that we actually sold in the shop to raise money for our race team. Got to know them better and better as business owners. And when we were moving to a new location, we'd always had this dream of having a little coffee shop and creating a real community feel. And it just made sense. And they were excited and partnered with us in this new build out.
And so is this, Scott, typically a busy time of year for you guys? Is it spring? Are more people bringing their bikes in?
It certainly is. It's kind of funny. I always joke that when the weather turns, people remember that they own a bicycle. So we generally get an influx of tune-ups this time of year. Now, it might be a little slower because of the weather currently, but yeah, it's a busy time for us.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Scott and Karen. We've got Scott's going to give us a couple tips, hopefully, for tuning up your bike this time of year. And we also are just going to talk about cycling in the Bloomington Normal area in general. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. It's our special broadcast from the Coffee Hound and Bloomington Cycle and Fitness in Bloomington. First, I'm Nyla Boodoo. We are kicking off a week of broadcasts from Bloomington Normal. We have been at the Coffee Hound, which is also the home of Bloomington Cycle and Fitness. Two of its co-owners, Karen Davis and Scott Davis, are with us here. By the way, if you have questions about cycling, you can about your bike and needing tune-up, you can tweet them to 21STShow. Scott will answer them. Karen, can I ask, this is such a beautiful space that you guys have here. I was in the shop earlier with you all, with all the wheels that are hanging. It's so beautifully designed. How many employees do you all have?
Peak season, we have about 12. We slim down a little bit in the winter, but that was part of the beauty of the collaboration with the Coffee Hound. We've created a lot more opportunity for year-round interest and year-round community events. Try to keep it happening in the winter. Scott and I both like to stay employed in the winter, too. So,
stay employed and you all still cycle in the winter,
yeah.
Am I right?
Correct.
Scott more than me. He's okay. A little more hardcore than me, yeah.
Scott, before we get to tips for how to cycle in this weather, Karen, what is it? Can you wonder if you can describe a little bit of the cycling scene in Bloomington Normal, particularly recreationally? There's some great trails that are available here.
Sure, yeah. Constitution Trail is right outside our door and runs for miles throughout Bloomington Normal. Mostly connected. There's a couple of offshoots that aren't quite connected, but we're really lucky to have that paved bike trail. It's a Rails to Trails project that's been around our community for years, and it's a big draw to the community. Makes Bloomington Normal pretty fun, livable, bikeable.
And you also, both of you, do you also have cyclists who are commuting across town as well?
Yes, a lot of cyclists. A couple of our employees actually commute in pretty often from out of town. And there are a lot of recreational and commuter-only cyclists in town that Constitution Trail makes it easy, but there is also an increasing amount of cycling infrastructure on the street that makes it easier and safer as well.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that infrastructure, mm-hmm. And especially as we've seen a push in our biggest cities. In Chicago, Mayor Emanuel is a big proponent for cycling and has built in Chicago. We've sort of seen over the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years, parts of the city streets have really changed because there are dedicated bike lanes now and there's dedicated space for cycling. What does the infrastructure look like in Bloomington Normal?
Well, I feel like we're a bit behind, especially larger cities, for sure. But that's kind of typical.
And in comparison to, say, like Champaign, Urbana?
I would say with on-street infrastructure for cycling, we are behind Champaign-Urbana. They have had a lot of advocates over there working to have safe streets and infrastructure for a long time. And I think that Bloomington Normal has been really lucky to have that Constitution Trail, and it's kind of created this very safe space for cyclists recreationally and somewhat for commuters. It goes quite a bit through town. But in the past 10 years, we've really started looking at how can we connect that with some really thoughtful infrastructure on the streets to make it safer for commuters and people who need to ride a bike for transportation.
And you mentioned advocacy. You're part of cycling advocacy groups in town. town as well.
Sure.
Those are relatively new, or how long have those been around?
Yes. I forget the exact year that Bike Bologna got established, but it's been within the past 10 years that it's really organized and began advocating for safer cycling and education of cyclists and drivers in Bloomington Normal.
And there is a plan right now that the cities do have on the books for developing more infrastructure,
there
right?
There is. Normal's had a plan for quite some time. Bloomington just adopted a bicycle pedestrian plan in the past several years. I forget exactly the year that passed as well, but they didn't have one, and that was a big effort on Bike Bologna's part to get them to adopt a bike ped plan and to get people to understand, too, that that wasn't just a plan to get paint on all the streets and spend a bunch of money on cycling infrastructure, but to have a plan so that they could thoughtfully, where they had the opportunity, create thoughtful infrastructure for cyclists.
To now, right now, what do you think your biggest need or want is as a cyclist in this area?
I have been focusing recently. I think the city and the town both have a good idea of what they can do and have their own budgets that they need to follow to create cycling infrastructure where they can. For me personally, I feel like education has been an important need. I just helped team teach our first Traffic Skills 101 to cyclists. To kind of create some awareness and some education and to keep people cycling safely and feeling more confident while doing it.
Right. That's Karen Davis. She's co-owner of Bloomington Cycle and Fitness. We're here with her husband, Scott Davis, who's also, they share the space as you hear the coffee being made in the background with the coffee hound. Scott, to that point about cycling safety, I wonder if we could go over a couple of tips just for people who sharing the roads. And let's start with the idea of someone with drivers. So when a driver is sharing the road with a cyclist, what are the rules that people need to remember?
Well, mainly, I think the driver needs to be conscious of and let the cyclist have a little bit of room. I believe that the drivers are supposed to give a cyclist about 3 feet when they're passing. But it's not all on the drivers. It's got to be on the cyclist, too. I think that we're quick to jump and say that the drivers are in fault, but in some cases, the cyclist is just in fault when there's a situation. So, as cyclists, we need to be more conscious to follow the same rules that the cars do.
Right. And then, so let's remind us also of the etiquette. So it's 3 feet. And then I imagine it's also, we always have problems when people aren't patient, Karen.
Absolutely.
Is that really kind of always an issue, right?
Absolutely. Well, drivers aren't patient with other drivers, but especially with cyclists. It's kind of newer to our area to see more cyclists on the streets because we've been so lucky with Constitution Trail, like I said. But there is a great bike safety quiz on the statewide advocacy website called rideillinois.org. They have a free bike safety quiz that anyone can take, and there's a couple different levels so you can focus from a driver or from a rider standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I wonder, for people who are just starting out and who may be nervous from the cycling standpoint, what are the most common questions you get from people who, or I'm going to guess, let me put it this way, I bet there's probably a lot of adults who come in who haven't ridden a bike since they were a kid.
All the time. All the time, yeah.
And so what's good advice for people especially if you're thinking about getting into cycling, maybe this is the year you're finally going to do it.
Well, just talking to people, we try to focus our staff on being educational and helping people find the right bike. Obviously, that's kind of what we do. But then also, you know, practicing, riding with friends, riding with groups. We're really lucky to have tons of groups in town like the McLean County Wheelers and Bike Bologna that have lots of opportunity for group rides. Constitution Trail provides a really safe, comfortable environment for cyclists where they can kind of get their legs back under them, so to speak. And then we always, you know, we don't preach or mandate helmets, but if we're doing group rides, we try to make sure everyone has a helmet and is safely equipped. And
yeah, and Scott, are helmets required by law in Illinois?
They are not.
They're not. Mm-hmm. You would recommend them, I imagine.
I would highly recommend helmets, yes.
Okay. And so helmets kind of a must. What other kinds of gear do you think new cyclists should be looking for?
Well, on a day like today, they're probably going to be looking for something to keep them a little warmer and dry. I think we need to, as far as safety goes, a helmet is going to be the best thing. But visibility is a key thing, too. So bright colors, flashing lights help.
Reflective vests.
Correct, okay. Correct. So anything that's going to keep or grab someone's attention, that's a good thing. So lighter colors especially. But, you know, make yourself visible. Ride, you know, unfortunately we have a lot of people that will ride on sidewalks, and in those situations it can be a little more dangerous. So we want to keep people on the roads and visible where they belong.
Right, and a reminder to not ride on the sidewalk. Do you guys see a change in the amount of people cycling when the time changes, just because there's more light out?
For sure. For sure. Yes. Maybe not Scott, because he rides all the time, but we definitely see a significant increase in our off-the-trail traffic when the light, it stays lighter a little longer.
And Scott, are you pretty much a year-round bike commuter here?
For the most part. Owning the business, there's some things I'm required to drive, taking things to and from FedEx, for example. But for the most part, yeah, I ride a lot.
And what advice do you have for people who want to ride year-round, or even people who want to start riding this time of year and it's not as warm as they thought it was going to be? What's the best gear you think they need to have, Scott?
I think the protective gear is the most important part. It's kind of a complicated question. It depends on what your job is and where you're headed. On how you can dress. So, you know, you on today like today, you want to be wearing something that's going to be windproof and keep you warm. So,
do you get worried about ice when you're biking?
Yeah, I do. Most of us do. There are tires that can be purchased that have actual studs in the tires to keep you safe on ice, but
probably not necessary here in Illinois, or you think?
Sometimes it is, yeah.
Sometimes okay. It definitely helps if you're really going to go hardcore and car free.
So for people who maybe, even if they're not, those folks who are not so hardcore and are just pulling their bikes out and remembering, as you guys said, that if the weather's getting warmer, they kind of remember they have their bikes in their garages. Maybe that bike has been sitting there for all winter, maybe even the fall. What's the most important thing in terms of what you need to do before you even take it to a bike shop for a tune-up?
Air up the tires. That would be the first thing. If the bicycle's been sitting for a long period of time, it's probably going to lose air. So you want to make sure that the tires are safe and hold air. And you're going to be wanting to check your brakes. So if the bike's been sitting a long time, it probably needs a tune-up. And we'd highly recommend that you get it into a bike shop and have it taken a look at.
Right. And so brakes, tires, air, what other kind of things do you guys do when you're doing a tune-up?
The chain is often one of the first things they look at when they're checking a bike in for a tune-up. If it's too stretched out, if it's too rusty, a lot of times they can be fixed. Sometimes they get stretched out to the point where they need to be replaced. But a good mechanic bringing it in for some maintenance, just like you would your car. Maintenance on a bike goes a long way,
so
keeping it running.
So this is probably the wrong time of year to ask this, because we should really be asking this question in the fall. But what's the best way to store your bike if you're not going to use it all winter?
In a dry spot would be good. Something where you can control the temperature environment.
I was going to say, is that important?
Because if it fluctuates and creating, you know, condensation, it'll also cause rust. And if it's in a nice dry spot, it'll preserve the bike a lot better.
And preferably climate controlled.
Yep.
And so if you're in the market for shopping for a new bike, maybe you did not do all of that. What are good questions for people to ask when they're going in looking for a new bike?
One of the first questions we always try to ask is what their dream ride is, what they want to do with that bike. Some people want one bike for a really specific purpose. Some people want one bike that can do several different things. So really thinking about what you want to use it for the most, and then going and talking to people, finding a shop where you feel comfortable, and test riding. Also, we have a lot of folks that come in thinking they want one bike, and then when they try it, they actually feel more comfortable on something totally different than what they came in looking for.
So probably you should go to a bike shop where they let you test ride.
If absolutely.
Are there bike shops that wouldn't let you do that?
I don't know. I hope not.
I'm not sure.
I hope not. I doubt it. That would seem kind of counterintuitive.
And any final advice for folks as we're thinking about drivers, pedestrians, and cyclists all sharing the road? Is this time of year, it's going to be, hopefully, within a couple of weeks, much warmer weather where everybody will be out.
Yeah, I think being conscientious of everyone around you and being visible and predictable.
Right, and I think also probably staying off your phones is a good idea for everybody,
for sure.
Right?
Yes, I didn't think that was a thing. I actually saw someone yesterday.
I've seen cyclists in Chicago on their phones while they're cycling.
I saw someone in Normal Saturday doing it, sadly.
All right, everyone should not be on their phones while you're cycling or driving. Karen Davis and Scott Davis are the owners of Bloomington Cycle and Fitness. Thanks for being here, and thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that wraps up today's broadcast, as we said, from Bloomington Cycle and Fitness. I want to thank all of the folks who were involved in our broadcast today. Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Fatima Farha is our intern. Technical direction and engineering support from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to our partners at WGLT for hosting us this week. And a reminder, we're going to be at Greentop Grocer on Wednesday if you want to come out and see that show at 11 a.m. You can always find past programs on the NPR One app if you search for the 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you follow us on Twitter, search for 21STShow. That's our handle. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. You can also search for us on Facebook, and you can comment on what we're working on. You can post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. All those links, every other way to contact us. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, or follow us on social media, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.